Hey guys, welcome to Crossroads. I'm glad you're with us. This is gonna be a great service. You know, we're in a series called Real Encounters that you're catching us in. And if you've ever had a moment where you've wondered, is God real? Could I actually have an encounter with him that is so real that it changes my life? These are the stories that we're hearing about, and this is the inspiration that we're gonna experience today. And we're gonna start our service off with worship. This is our chance to say things to God that we believe are true, or even we hope are true, if we're sort of exploring who God is. And so as we do that, I want you to turn the music up, get everybody in the room. We're gonna kick into worship right now.
Welcome to Crossroads. So glad you're here. If you are new, I just want you to know you are so welcome. Won't you guys stand up? We're going to sing a couple songs together that I believe are true. Here we go.
Let me hear your voice when you call us out. Guys, my name is Sophie, if we haven't met. And if you do know me, you know that the last few years have been really hard for me. My life pretty much fell apart when my husband decided to leave our marriage. And actually, just a few days after that is when I found out that we were pregnant. And so suddenly my life looked nothing like I ever imagined it would look like. This was not the life I pictured for myself. And I was so angry, and I was embarrassed, I felt stupid, I felt unwanted, unlovable, abandoned, and the only thing I'd ever seen of broken families was a ton of bitterness and anger and just this awful tension, and really the biggest victims of that are the kids, right? The kids are the ones that suffer the most, and I just knew I didn't want that for my daughter, but I didn't know any other way because I hadn't ever seen it before. I knew I didn't want her to have to pay for something she never asked for. I didn't want her to have to worry about protecting my emotions and being afraid to come home and tell me about the fun things she had done with daddy because she was afraid to hurt my feelings. I didn't want her to have to do that. And meanwhile, I had culture screaming at me about my rights, not just custodial rights, but my right to be angry and my right to be bitter and just holding on to that resentment. I knew that even though I didn't know how to not hate this person, that I didn't want my emotions to poison the soil that my kid was gonna have to grow up in. And so I just kinda cracked open my really hard, terrified heart and said, God, I have no idea how to do this, but what would it look like if I actually let you be Lord of this place that I feel like I have the right to hold on to and stay bitter about? And he started to propose to me, okay, Sophie, what if instead of you two being the ones that teach her what bitterness looks like, what if it's actually from you two that she learns what forgiveness actually looks like in real flesh? What if it's from the two of you that she learns what it looks like to honor someone who has hurt you? And what if you not only make me the Lord of putting you back together, because you know I'll be faithful to put you back together, what if you also make me the Lord of how you engage this new story that is your life? And so I started, one by one, handing over my emotions, being very real with God about how angry I was and how confused I was and all the fears I now had, but saying, but I'll let you in. I'll let you speak into this place where it's the lowest place in my life, but I'll let you direct me in this emotion. And I started to experience him like rewiring my brain, stuff that I knew was not from me, just because I let him into that space and said, you have permission to be Lord here. And I started to, these ideas came to my brain where it was like, what if actually this, so I'm dealing with emotions not just of an ex-spouse, but I'm also dealing with his new wife and another woman being in the life of my child. And you mamas know that territorial mama bear love, right? And this entitlement we think we have to, like, you know, she's mine. And I knew that even though I felt I had the right to not like these people, that was only gonna hurt my child. And so just handing those emotions over to God and him redirecting my mind and going, what if actually this other woman is a blessing? What if, you know, now there's this whole other person, a whole other person whose entire life is now centered around loving my child. It's a good thing. Now there's this other person who has gifts and hobbies and talents that I don't have. Let's just be honest. She likes to bake. I don't bake. Now, great. You do that with my child. You take care of that. All these things that I never would have brought to her life, my kid gets to experience. And just the comfort of knowing that when she's out of my care, when she's with her dad, there's another safe woman she can go to. These things are blessing if I let myself put down my pride and my territorialism and let God make something good out of my lowest spot. And I started to experience my heart actually kind of liking this woman and being able to see the good in her and thank her for helping me mother my child. And I felt that like physical weight on my chest actually lift, where now I'm experiencing freedom and I'm not feeling that anger on top of me all the time. And caught myself like praying for their marriage and blessing their marriage out loud, the exact opposite of what the enemy would want us to do in these situations. And so whatever your kind of locked up area is in your life where you feel like you have the right to hold on to it, you have the right to be angry or bitter, I just want to encourage you to maybe consider letting God in, having a conversation with him. What would it look like for you to let him be Lord of how you engage even that area? So I want to invite you guys to sing along. We're going to sing a song about letting God be the Lord of all.
Thank you.
love you so much. I am so grateful that you are Lord over everything, that when life falls to pieces, we don't have to lean on ourselves, that we can lean on you. And when life is beautiful and amazing, you're right there celebrating and smiling right next to us. You are such a personal and loving Father, and I thank you so, so much for that. Thanks, God. Amen. All right, you guys, good singing. I have some special instructions. So find your neighbor or a single guy and tell them, yes, Sophie is single, and then you can have seat. She's gonna kill me, but it's okay. Really, you can have a seat. I'm sorry. That was confusing.
Hey, guys. I'm Matt. I'm the campus pastor of Crossroads Anywhere. We're glad you're with us this weekend. If you're brand new, I'd love to just kind of give you some context about this place. I think it's probably different than anything you've experienced in the past. You know, Crossroads has been around for a while, and ever since the beginning, our aim has been to be a real place for real people. That's important to us because we don't believe that church is the kind of thing that you show up to and you put on some sort of fake face and act like everything's good. We are a place where real people come together to learn about Jesus and try to be more like him and learn more about him. And that means we come tired. We come with a past. We come with an attitude sometimes, whatever it is. You know, we want to be a place though where we come, we don't have to be fake, and we can be real. And to that end, I want to give you a couple of handholds, places you can engage in and around Crossroads no matter where you are. The first is through Kids Club. Kids Club is an incredible place where we have a bunch of content that's made to talk about Jesus in a language that our kids can understand. So if you're a family with kids of any age, I want you to check out crossroadskidsclub.net/anywhere. You can go there, and every week there's a new weekly plan, a new thing that you can do as a family to engage your whole family in a conversation about God. And you can explore that entire site. There are videos that are being used all around the world that talk about different stories from the Bible, different characters from the Bible. There's incredible music on there. You're gonna wanna explore that whole site, and as a family, this is gonna help you guys engage with God no matter where you are. The other thing that's really important, if you're gonna sort of navigate Crossroads and begin to get more involved, is getting in a group. We think church is a team sport around here. It's not something that we do on our own. And so you can go to crossroads.net/groups and scroll through the hundreds of groups. Find a group in your neighborhood. Find a group that shares a passion that you're passionate about. If you can't find something right for you, if you want help getting in community, we would love to help you. And so you can just shoot us an email at anywhere@crossroads.net, and we'll personally connect and make sure that we find the community that's right for you. The other thing I want you to know about is a team of people around here who believe so passionately in what God is doing at Crossroads. They've chosen to be sacrificially generous and fund all of these experiences. If you're one of those people actually on that team who fund these experiences, I just want to say thank you, because of your generosity, we're all able to experience these inspiring experiences we've had every weekend, all the groups that people are a part of, all the opportunities we had to go and serve are made possible because of your generosity. If you'd like to join that team and be a part of that movement, you can go to crossroads.net/give. You can set up a reoccurring gift. That's what my family does. It comes out every week. You can start with a one-time gift. And if you're brand new here, I want you to know about these people because they care deeply about you, but I don't want you to feel any pressure to give, any obligation to take part in this, as you're sort of starting to trust us and learn more about us. We're gonna jump into the rest of our service now as we aim to encounter God in a real way. Glad you're here.
I'm here with my friend Muhammad, a real shepherd over in Israel, and he's doing something that a great Bible hero did, King David. We're going to talk about him today as we try to have a real encounter with God. Go get him. a real encounter with God. Muhammad is like David was. In the very earliest years of his life, Muhammad and David oversaw sheep like this. And this enabled David to understand how God would form him. Today we're gonna have a real encounter with God, a real one. And we're gonna have things in common with David. David started as a lowly shepherd boy. He had amazing success in a battle we'll talk about. Then he had some major pain of heartbreak. And then he had riches again. It's like rags, riches, rags, riches. That's the way his life went as he had a real encounter with God, growing to be who God wanted him to be. You might be very low right now. Guess what? You're gonna get higher. You might be very high right now. You're gonna get lower at some point. Through that all, God is equipping us to have the life that he's designing us to have. And David, I see his humility, I see his strength, I see him rolling with the punches, and it starts with creatures like this. And today, you're gonna have a real encounter with God and try to learn from the master David as you allow God to shepherd you. She scared me there. Wasn't expecting you to be there. Well, as we talk about David, you can't talk about David unless you understand transformation. He is a guy who gets transformed by God, and that's something that I want for you today. I want that in your entire life. I want you to feel and sense God changing you. That's what he does. He's in the business of transformation. You can't talk about David either unless you talk about the most famous scene in his life, arguably the most famous scene in the entire Bible. One of the stories that cuts across all cultures and all religions that people at least know of, it's the story of David and Goliath. You could be an atheist who's never been to church in America and you've heard of this story. And because of that, I'm always stupefied when I go over to Israel and I go to where that took place. We know definitively where it took place, that there sort of aren't money-making opportunities there. All the places we're going in this series, they're A sites, meaning no question this is where that took place. And where we're gonna go right now is absolutely where David met Goliath. And pretty pristine, there's a massive road that goes through the side of it, but it's pretty undisturbed and it's pretty cool. Let's go look at this because this story means something about the character of God who transforms, and it means something about how he may want to transform you.
Samuel 17, verse 40 and 48 through 49. David took his staff in his hand and chose five smooth stones from the brook and put them in his shepherd's pouch. His sling was in his hand and he approached Goliath. When Goliath arose and came and drew near to meet David, David ran quickly towards the battle line to meet the Philistine. And David put his hand in his bag and took out a stone and slung it and struck the Philistine on his forehead. The stone sank into his forehead and he fell on his face to the ground.
So David has this humble beginnings, and now we're in a place where he starts to kind of have a meteoric rise. He goes from being a shepherd to being an amazing warrior in the most publicized and well-known battle in the history of the world, David and Goliath. Give us a little rundown of that.
Well, we are standing here, as you said, in the Elah Valley. The Bible describes exactly that location. It speaks about the Philistines standing from one side on top of these hills around us, and the Israelites at the other side, and the valley, the Elah Valley, is between them.
Which is where we are.
Exactly where we are.
So David sees this huge guy. He's taunting the nation of Israel. He's going, come on, send me down your best guy. Send me down your best guy. And David shows up, and no one is willing to step up, are they?
You're right, yeah. This young guy, this young boy is coming from Bethlehem, which is not very far from here. He's coming to see his brothers, which he probably admires. They are in the front lines. They're fighting, you know, so-called for the nation. And he gets there and he sees that there is a guy from the enemies keep on cursing their God, his God, and no one is doing anything. No one, including the king himself.
Who is the biggest guy in the nation?
Yeah, he was considered to be a high, you know, guy. Probably also people looked at him really physically as a high guy. We know there is a giant, but the young boy, he shows a lot of faith and a lot of anger when it's related to his God.
So here we have the small guy who's gonna get stuff done, and we see him aggressive. When you have a real encounter with God, you have to be in aggression mode. You can't just sit back and hope everything works well. And we see that David does this. He actually runs to the fight. He runs down this hill and he picks up some stones here in the brook. And since this is a real encounter, I think I'm gonna have to do that right now.
I thought you would.
I mean, how can you not run down the exact hill that David ran down and like reenact that? So
you should do that. I will wait here. I trust that you will do it great.
All right, so we're gonna have a real encounter, and I just hope my face doesn't have a real encounter with the ground on the way down. Let's go, let's do this. All right, let me give you some context for this. Initially, this whole scene was supposed to be down in the valley, and I looked up at this hill and was like, wait a minute, that's the hill David came down. Why are we not like doing that? And they said, well, we could do that if you want. And we got drones and stuff. I said, yeah, heck yeah, man. How often do I get to actually retrace the journey of David going to fight against Goliath? So I'm up there on top. I'm thinking, this is going to be awesome. This is going to be great. Here's what I didn't realize. I was very careful of noticing where the footholds were on the way walking up that mountain. And I thought, there's no need to like prove myself here at all. I'm just going to like kind of trot down, get the sense of the lay of the land. I haven't run downhill like forever. When's the last time you actually ran downhill? I'm not talking about those of you who are eight. Actually, those of you who are eight don't even run anymore. You just play video games. Back in my day, we used to actually run when we were outside. We used to have recess. We used to do stuff outside the house and run and roll downhill. I haven't tried to run down a hill. In fact, I haven't even run on anything that wasn't moving mechanically inside of an air-conditioned unit, an air-conditioning building for a long, long time. So I'm just gonna trot down, but here's what I forgot. If you're going down a hill, guess what? Gravity is pulling you down, so what starts just a nice trot turns into my body is coming down the mountain, and the rest of my body, my legs, I'm having to move my legs just to keep up with my body that's falling down the mountain, and on treacherous running conditions, I end up being in a full-out sprint, the worst conditions I can imagine. I gotta tell you, I'm pretty impressed with myself. I got down to the bottom of that hill with every limb perfectly intact. Oh, man. My throat was not good at all. Oh, dude. I thought David was a manly man all along, but after that, I can't imagine running down there, getting stones, and having pinpoint accuracy to hit a guy in the forehead and kill him. David, at this point, when he falls down dead, he goes over, he takes his big sword, bigger than he probably might have been, takes his big sword, goes, bam, he comes down, he whacks his head off, grabs his head, lifts it up to the army, said, "Who wants to follow my God? Who wants to follow my God?" At that point, the armies are just ready. They come streaming down this whole place, and the Philistines are waiting on the other side. They see what's happening. They've lost all momentum, and the day is won, and a star is born. It's like the story should end right there, but it doesn't. Just when you think, like, life couldn't get any better, it's all like peaches and herbs from here on. Remember them peaches and herbs? That's an old man. I don't know. That's a stupid line. But another, just when you think it'll be all him going on and on and on and on, he has major, major difficulties. This is what's like with us. We have a major battle. We have a high, and we think we're going to be okay, and we're not, because life happens. And then David goes down in a literal spiritual valley. That's what we're going to look at next. Maybe it's where you are. Maybe you're going to be there someday, but we need to have a real encounter with the real God that David encountered in his life.
First Samuel 22, 1 and 2. David left Gath and escaped to the cave of Adullam. When his brothers and his father's household heard about it, they went down to him there. All those who were in distress or in debt or discontented gathered around him, and he became their commander. About 400 men were with him.
For the point of David taking Goliath's head off, his life is up and to the right. I mean, things are going amazing for him. He becomes a warrior. He starts winning battle after battle. He has people who emulate him, and they come to be around him. They're called the mighty men. They're all for battle. And his reputation grows to the point where they're making top 40 songs about him. It says something like this: Saul has killed his thousands, and David has killed his tens of thousands. Saul, the king, the huge king, who is now threatened by this upcoming warrior who's getting all these accolades. And so as a result, Saul is very, very insecure. And so he amasses his army to go after David. And David has got to go on the run. I don't know if you've ever had this before, where things are going really well, and all of a sudden there's a switch, there's a turn, and you've got to go on a run. David goes from being physically low in the Valley of Elah against Goliath to be physically high up in this area where we are right now. I'm in the area that's called the Cave of Adullam. You can read about it in the Bible. It's where David goes to escape Saul, who's trying to kill him. And you might know somebody who's been to Israel before. And if they ever like going, "Oh, yeah, I went to Israel. Just say to them, "Hey, have you ever been to the Cave of Adullam?" And they'll probably go, "The Cave of Hoba, what?" They probably never even heard of it. It's a key pivotal point in David's life. If they have heard of it, you're not going to find anyone who's been there, because it's not in the normal tourist scene. We're here right now. The Cave of Adullam is up on the hill. And it's a series of caves that goes all throughout this area. And there's a bunch of holes. And we're not sure exactly which hole that David went into. But we do know this, that he went in there to hide out, to find a safe place to get away from the tension in his life. You might have had tension in your life before. And don't you just need a safe place, a place to sort of escape to? This is where David went. While he was emotionally down, he goes to a place to retreat. He comes in here, into the Cave of Adullam. We're having real experience with God. I'll tell you, going in here is going to be a real experience. Very few people go inside of these things. Could be very dangerous. In fact, one of the things you're supposed to do is find a rock and throw it in there, because hyenas are in the area and you want to scare them. So see if they come out. Let's see if we got any in here. Ow, you hurt me. No, I didn't hit anybody. Okay, no one's going there. So we're going to go in. I tell you, this is a little freaky, because there are scorpions all around this area and also poisonous snakes. So we're having a real encounter with the real God. Hopefully I don't have a real encounter with something that kills me dead. So let's go, and we're gonna talk about that inside here. David goes from the high place to the low place, to the dark place. It's a place that none of us like to be. We do everything we can to stay out of the low place. We will manipulate situations to keep us out of here. When we are feeling down in a low, dark place, we'll blame it on God. How could you possibly do this to me? You're not loving. Or we use it as validation that God doesn't exist. See, I know God doesn't exist. I'm going to be an atheist, or I'm going to be an agnostic. Or we play the victim. Somebody else has done all this stuff to me. Or we deny. Oh, no, I'm okay. No, everything is fine. No, everything's good. Happy thoughts. Because we don't really know how to wrestle with how to feel the level of constriction and confinement being in a low and dark place. No one likes it. We want to get out of here. And here's the big idea. We have got to embrace when we're in the low place, when we're in the dark place, because it is in those places that God does a kind of work on us that He doesn't do when we're up on the mountain in the sunlight. We don't like it, but we need God's transforming power when we're in the low places. Some of the hugest lessons I've learned about God and the biggest things God's used to build me and grow me have happened in the low place. Our first daughter was an unexpected pregnancy. That was a low place, not because she was going to come in the world and be an amazing blessing, but because it was unexpected. We had no insurance to cover a pregnancy. And the same day I found that out, I found out my church that I worked at was cutting my salary in half. That was a low place. Before we came to Cincinnati, we had the opportunity. So we thought to go out to California and take on an established church. It was a plum job. It was like perfect. And we interviewed, it went great, and Liv and I had heard as clearly as we ever thought we could that God was saying, this is the place. We were ready, we were making plans, and the call came that something happened and they were gonna take somebody else. And it was as if the evil one himself just snatched that away. We were convinced that something had happened in the spiritual realm because this was not the will of God, and we were in a low place. Awful times at Crossroads when during a major Christmas production awaited. We had a woman fall to her death on opening night. I tell you what, you're talking about low place? Try to figure out what's the ramifications on her family's life. What's the ramifications on the church? What's this look like legally? What's this look like for me? Guys, this is a sign of some sort. The low place. And here's a really wild thing. In all of those situations, I can look back now and see that low place was exactly what I needed. I needed to trust God that He was in control of my family and everything in my family, even when financially it didn't make sense. In reality, she was born at the right time. I wouldn't want to wait another year. I shudder to think what would have happened had I gone to California and not to Cincinnati. What an awful life. Jeez, stick a fork in me if that's where I'm going to live the rest of my life. I love where I am. I love everything about the area I live in. I love the thing that God has enlisted me in, including me in His kingdom. I love that. And while the pain still lingers for Carrie's death, there were ways that formed our church and dependence on God and trust of God. And actually, there were ways that thing took people who had lost people years, decades ago, and they saw what it looked like to grieve as we grieved as a church, and our church and individuals got spiritually healthy. These are just some of my low places and how I've seen God transform me and transform situations, and I know that you have them too. I know that in your low place, you want out of it, you don't want to be there. Yeah, I'm telling you, you gotta be there. You gotta hang there. In fact, that low place is the start of where God builds you to. When David was in this low place, in this cave, I don't know where in this cave, there's so many passages, but when he was in this cave, hunkered down, having a pity party, praying to God, people started coming in. Maybe one person came in that passageway, another one through here. People started coming around because they heard, hey, this guy who's really powerful is coming here, and he's in a low place, and I'm in a low place too. It says that 400 people who are one of three things, distressed, in debt, or discontented, all came and gathered here, and they hunkered together, and God formed them together. It was the beginning of a new movement that would go across this land. When David comes out of this cave, he is a new man because he's been formed, he's been transformed. If you want a real encounter with God, you've got to embrace that in your low place, that's where God can do a specific work that he can't do and won't do any other place. You've got to embrace it, and you've got to lean into it, and you've just got to allow him to work in you and see things you hadn't seen before and feel things you don't want to feel and think things that are scary thoughts to you and roll with the punches as they come. It will end. It will. It will. It will end. But you've got to stay there. You've got to man up. You've got to keep your chin up while you keep your head bowed in reverence. That day will end. And it will end in a good way so long as you go with the transforming experience that David is having in God's hands. I want to hit the pause button for just a moment right now. We'll get back to it, but I think it's helpful right now to hear a story from somebody who has been transformed and is still being transformed. His name is Will. He's a part of Crossroads, has been for a while. His kids take advantage of Kids Club. He's a leader in the Man Camp movement, and he has something to tell us and something we can learn from. And with him is Chuck Mingo, our Oakley campus pastor. And so let's go ahead and check in with them and see what we can learn about his story and apply it to the story of transformation that God may be about to do, if he's not doing already, in our own lives.
So Will, we are in front of a baptismal tub. And there's a reason for that. This is a place where you had a real encounter with God.
Yeah.
How would you say you experienced God at this baptismal pool?
Well, before this moment, I grew up in a very abusive home. It was both physical and verbally abusive. I would get beat with extension cords, telephone cords, and at one point, 2x4s. And it wasn't so much the physical as much as it was the verbal attacks. Just telling me that I would never amount to anything, telling me that I was stupid, I would never do anything with my life. And at that time, this was the only person that I had. My father wasn't around, so I'm hearing these things from the only person in my life that's supposed to love me. And if she's telling me these things, then, I mean, after a while, you kind of start to accept it. She never hugged me, never told me that she loved me, never told me she was proud of me for anything.
How did being treated that way affect your behavior?
It was hard because I would go to school and try to hide the welts. I would oftentimes get into fights. I treated others pretty much the way I was treated. That was all that I knew.
What are some examples of how that impacted your relationship with women growing up that way?
How can I love a woman? Or how can I be nurturing to my children when I didn't experience those things growing up? So I thought that just being a provider was good enough. And it's like, okay, well, you're a great provider, but you're a lousy dad. You're a lousy husband.
You talked about not feeling like you had anybody to count on in your life. And there was really one exception to that.
Yes, well, I grew up with a friend. His name is Lewis. I was going through hard times back in 2010. My wife had divorced me, so this guy was almost like a used car salesman. I mean, you know, he was on it. I mean, and I fought him for a number of years because I thought he was crazy. You know, as I was thinking back, he really was the only consistent person in my life.
Right.
I mean, whenever I went through hard times or adversity, he was always a real friend. He told me what I needed to hear as opposed to what I wanted to hear. I heard a voice in the back of my head just say, it's time for you to go. It's time for you to go to church.
Man.
As David's in here, he's doing business with God. He pulls out his journal, starts praying and writing it down. Much of it is in the book of Psalms. This psalm is commonly believed to be written in this spot, it's Psalm 57, and David says this to God, "Be merciful to me, O God. Be merciful to me, For in you, my soul takes refuge. In the shadow of your wings, I will take refuge. Till the storms of destruction pass by, I cry out to God Most High, to God who fulfills his purpose for me. He will send from heaven and save me. He will put to shame those who trample on me. God will send out his steadfast love and his faithfulness. He knows he's down, but he knows God will fulfill his purpose. He will lift him up, and I'm telling you, you may not feel it in the moment, but you need to tell yourself, no, there is a God who knows me and is forming me, and he can do with me what he wants, and he will have his way, and he will eventually lift me up.
If the darkness is the place that you will meet with me, if darkness is the place that you will meet with me, in the dark night of the soul, your light reaches me. And when the sun can't reach, your love it carries me. If darkness is the place that you will meet with me, make me yours. Though I'm broken through and through, make me yours. Though I've shadow of your wings, the poor become the crowned. In the dark and in the deep, your voice it speaks to me. If in the mystery is where you are found, make me yours.
Make yours.
Though nations bow before me and rule. nothing left but you. Make me yours.
David is inside this area, and these people are all around him. They've been trying to find him. They come, and he's with his mighty men. And he starts longing to get out of the cave. He starts longing for some of the good things of his previous life. And he goes, oh, wouldn't I just love to taste the water of my favorite well in Bethlehem? He just says it out loud. And his friends, those who have been in the low place with him, they hear him. They go, hey, let's help our friend. It's interesting. You see people gather around you when you're in your place. You get to lean into community that you wouldn't when you're on top. When you're on top, guess what? You're alone. When you're down lower, you get to be with other people. And some of his mighty men, they head out of here and they get through enemy lines. They get to Bethlehem. They get water and they carry water. These water carriers come over and they come back in and say, hey, I understand you want this water. Here it is. And they give this water to him. Looks at this water and he dumps it up. He pours it out. And he says, this kind of sacrifice is only worthy of God. This is an act of worship and it's only worthy of God. I'm not worthy of this. Isn't this interesting? He goes from having a pity party, thinking about himself, to now he's thinking about God and giving him worship. You know you've turned the corner when you stop thinking about you and your situation, you start thinking about God and all of his mighty men who would have been gathered around this area. If I'm them, I'm going to be going, oh my gosh, we risked our life and limb. We come in here and he pours water out and just sees it go all over these rocks. You'd think they'd be upset. You know what they do? They go, yep, that's my guy. That's why I follow you. Because you follow God and you have something deep in your fiber that other people don't have. That's why I will follow you. That's why I'll be committed to you forever. And your greatness will always be dependent on what God is doing in you and how dependent you are on him and how other people trust you. And guess what? People, they just, it's big. If you're gonna do something really big in your life, you have to have other people. And the thing is, other people don't trust people who don't behave well in the cave. Other people don't know if they can depend on somebody unless they're secure enough to stay down, to stay in the low place. But when you have your character formed that way and people see that, they will rally and you'll be part of something that could change things that you can't do on your own. And it's not about changing things. The main thing is understanding you've been transformed by God. And it's time to get up and out. It's time to move on to the next place.
I heard a voice in the back of my head just say, it's time for you to go. It's time for you to go to church.
So Lou is this faithful presence in your life. He invites you to Crossroads. So do you remember the first time you came to Crossroads?
This brother, you thought he hit the lottery. I mean, he was just on the phone, just screaming and yelling. He was just so excited that I was coming to church with him.
When did you know it was time to get baptized? Was that something Lou was talking with you about? What led to that?
I just knew in my heart that it was time.
Give us a definition of baptism. What did it mean for you to go under the water and come up?
What it meant to me was that I was dying to that old life of being angry, the abuse and everything that I encountered. My divorce, which was totally my fault, how I treated my kids. I was dying to all of that, and I was being born again. I felt free, mm-hmm. Freedom, mm-hmm. Freedom from that life.
One of the things that happened after baptism is at some point, Lewis invited you into a group, a guys group, right?
Lewis and I went around the room and asked us to pretty much just share our stories with the group. And I shared mine about my abusive childhood and
In detail.
In detail. And a brother, John, he just looked at me and he said, "You have to forgive her." And I thought to myself.
Meaning you have to forgive your mom.
Meaning I have to forgive my mom. Well, he looked at me right in the face and said, you need to forgive her. And don't make it about her. It's not about her. You have to forgive her for your salvation. And at that point, it was just like, wow. I set up a meeting to meet with my mom at my house. And I just told her how I felt, how she made me feel growing up, and I forgave her. I forgave her. It made me look at myself as a father and say, hey, you need to fix X, Y, and Z with your children. So I would bring all the kids and get all the kids together with my mom, and we would just go out and just meet and just do things together.
So you literally are taking new ground and showing your kids a relationship that you never got to experience.
Absolutely. And just trying to just introduce them to God and hopefully so that they can see how the Lord has changed me and hopefully they will just follow in those footsteps.
So how has having this encounter, Lou, and the baptism, how has it changed how you see God?
It's just mind-blowing that he brought me from that point to where I am now. I'm finally in a place where I can, you know, just love my children unconditionally, unlike what I experienced.
David gets out of the low place. He gets out of the dark place. And he starts to rise again. And he rises, not because he pulls himself up by his own bootstraps. He rises because of the transforming power of God. That same power is available to you and I. In fact, we actually have it better than David had it, because God came later on, actually through his seed, through partially his DNA, and Jesus came and walked this earth. Remember we did Capernaum last week? We talked about people saying, Jesus, son of David? We have something that he had, except better. We have actually Jesus himself, God himself, that's able to come inside of us, transform us, empower us, comfort us, do for us what we can't do for ourselves. But we have to receive him. It's not just a philosophy. It's not just an ideology. We have to receive him. I don't know if you've ever done that before. I did that when I was age 15, 16 years old. It was the best, the most powerful decision I made that's led to all things that are significant in my life. You know, you might want to do that right now. So here's what happens. All you have to do is say a prayer and tell God that you want him in your life and you want Jesus in your life, and you talk to him and he fills you. Just like that cave, gets filled with his presence, your heart gets filled with his presence. It goes like this. You can pray with me right now if you want. God, I thank you for bringing me to the low place. It wasn't comfortable while I was there, but I'm thankful that you've been working in me, and I ask you that you would come into my life right now. Jesus, enter my life, enter my world. Holy Spirit, fill me with your love and your presence. Forgive me for my attitude, for anything I might have done to get myself in the low place. As best I can, I'm gonna follow you the rest of my life because I have your transforming power. I pray these things according to your identity, Jesus. Amen. That's good stuff right there. That'll transform your life. If you just prayed that prayer for the first time, well done. That's good stuff. I encourage you to reach out to somebody who you know has also prayed that prayer, or you're pretty darn sure they have, and just confide in them. And they'll help you get started in this new faith of yours, or contact the Crossroads offices. We'd love to shoot some stuff your way. Hey, it's an honor to have you as a part of us today in this whole journey, whether you're Crossroads Florence or Crossroads Uptown or Crossroads Oakley or Crossroads Mason or Crossroads Westside or Crossroads Oxford, wherever you may be, or Crossroads anywhere that may be. I'm hoping that you're getting a lot out of this, and we are not done. We still got a ways to go. So we'll see you back next week.
Hey guys, we have a couple of more weeks in our Real Encounter series, which means there's a couple more chances for us to find out who in our life needs to experience the things that we've been experiencing through this series. Next week is all about healing, how when we encounter God, He brings healing into our life. And so just think about your family, your friends, your coworkers. Who in your world do you know can't miss out on this message next weekend? Make sure they're with you. And if you're experiencing God in this series and there's anything we can join with you in prayer, we can pray for you for, we'd love to do that. Will you email us at prayer@crossroads.net so that we can pray for you as we go on this journey together as one big team? We're excited about next week. We'll see you then.